Today, you are going to get a front row seat to the incredible Springbok career of two-time Rugby World Cup champion, Stephen Kitsoff. Stephen, welcome to Front Row Rugby.
No, thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
The pleasure is all mine. Stephen, let's begin in 2016. Your Springbok debut, it's against Ireland in what was then still called Port Elizabeth. Talk to us about that occasion.
Probably one of the highlights of my rugby career. It was like playing 5 years for the Stormers, having to go, getting an opportunity to go play in Bordeaux, and then being recalled into the Springbok squad a couple of months later was quite special. So, no, it was a dream come true for me, playing my debut game in South Africa. Even though it wasn't in Cape Town, it was still in PE at the Nelson Mandela Bay Stadium, against a very, very strong Irish side. So came on, last 25 minutes of the game, first movement I had was a scrum, scrumming against a lifelong friend and Todd Furlong, and it was just magical. And yeah, from there, building into what was the rest of my career was just special.
And obviously it was great that we won that test as well. But having said that, 2016 was a little bit of a difficult year for the box. We will get into more detail. I just want to talk about that 57-15 defeat against the All Blacks in Durban. How disappointing was that for you?
Something that's still stuck in my mind, and it often gets mentioned, that it wasn't all perfect throughout the Springbok career. I think there was, as you said, 2016, 2017 was two tough years, with the massive loss against New Zealand in Durban, and then that massive loss we had, I think 57-0 at North Harbour. So it was quite emotional, and I think when you're part of a Springbok team, you want to serve, you want to give everything, but when things go like that, it's almost like you start looking at yourself. If you are the problem, if you're part of the issues, and if the Springboks would not be better without you, and then those negative thoughts start creeping in, and it's tough to get out of it when you go into that spiral. So that Durban loss, also North Harbour, and the results against the loss against Italy, and a lot of things happened in those years that was really tough. But I'm very proud to have stayed part of the Springbok squad that turned it around and became world champions basically 2 years later or 3 years later.
And we are going to get to that point. But just quickly, you mentioned the defeat to Italy, obviously the 57-0 to the All Blacks. But just before that, into 2017, we started off our season really, really nicely by beating France 3-0 in that series. We beat Argentina as well, back-to-back. What do you think was different at the start of that year compared to a year before that?
So 2016, we lost our opening game against Ireland, and then ended up winning the series by pure heart and effort. And I think probably what followed the following season with having the French come to South Africa, it was three tough test matches. I think as a Springbok squad, when you get together, there's always excitement. There's always eagerness to work. And grow and make sure that we buy into the plans. For me, it was having such a good start to that 2017 season and then going into the Rugby Championship, and then from there into the end of the year tour. It was amazing in the beginning. Like, as you said, like we beat the French, which was a great side at that stage. But then having bad results throughout the Rugby Championship, losing 57-0, having a close game at Newlands and losing it in the last 5 minutes, not having great results against Argentina and Australia, it almost felt like the wheels started falling off a little bit. And then going at the end of the year tour, and I think not winning one game was quite tough. So as a team, you always want to win. You want to be above that 70% win threshold. And you want to do it for not just your teammates and your coaches, but for the country. And I think we let people down in the way that we started performing towards the end of it, because having losses, having bad performances, the team doesn't really buy into the plans. They there's a little bit of an ego involved, and then results go against us.
And if we can talk about those results that were going against us in 2017, as you mentioned, that end of year tour, As a player, do you start getting a sense that the coach is under pressure and that he might actually be out of a job sometime soon?
No, of course. I think as players as well, like you, if you look at current Springbok squad, like when things go well, the rotation within the squad stays consistent, and it stays the same players, and it's always the same faces that you see with added new guys. So the rotation stays consistent. I think when things go well, it's pointing at head coach is probably the first move, and then after that is. When new coaches come in, they want different players. They're playing a different style. So you're always nervous for your position when a coach gets it's under pressure because he might think, listen, yeah, the current crop of players I've picked is not the right guys to do the job. So let's go look for something new. And then as a player, you also feel that pressure. So I think Alistair, and I love Alistair, and he's been an amazing coach for me throughout my Super Rugby days, and he gave me an opportunity to play for the Boks the first time. It's tough. It's tough for him, and you could feel he was under pressure, and it didn't go too well for him. So, yeah, you do feel that pressure.
And what can you tell us about Alistair as a coach, the way that you experienced him?
Yeah, I thought Alistair was amazing, especially in the beginning of my career. He was the one who gave me a phone call to come out of school to start joining them for their preseason and at 2011 Super Rugby season. He was the one who phoned me to tell me to come back to South Africa. He wants me to represent the Springboks. He wants me to be part of the squad. So he was always someone that backed me, and to this day I'll be forever grateful for the coach he was, and the way that he worked with me, and how open and honest he was in when either I didn't play right, or my game performance wasn't up to his standard. And what he's taught me about the game, especially at a development stage of my professional career. So he was incredible, and I think when him and Rassie worked together at the Stormers, they were just a magical squad with Jacques Nienaber being there as well. So yeah, I've got a lot of admiration for Alistair, and a lot of respect and time, and very grateful for what he did for my career.
So, Stephen, probably 70 episodes ago on this show, I had Eddie Andrews, who obviously played for Western Province and the Stormers as well back in the day. And Eddie told me that when he was called up to the squad for the first time in 2004, it was obviously just after the 2003 World Cup and it was Kamp Stalsraad and all that stuff, right? And obviously the mood in the camp was quite negative, and then Jake White came in, and Jake told the players, "We are going to win the next World Cup." And Eddie says that even though the players felt a little bit optimistic, they were kind of looking at each other saying, "Hey man, what is this guy smoking?" I'm just wondering, when Rassie then took over in 2018, if there might be any sort of parallel with what happened there, what Eddie Andrews was describing.
100%. When Rassie came in, he changed a couple of key things, and I think probably one of the things that stand out the most for me today, and probably one of the biggest lessons I've learned in rugby, is it's not always picking the best players. It was his philosophy was to pick the right players to get the job done. And when he started picking the right players, the guys that bought into the plan, bought into the strategy, the tactics, it was aligned in what we try to do. The results started going away, and from there they started building this win at all costs almost aura around the Springbok side. So for me, that was what was quite special, is that when Rassie came in 20 beginning of 2018, that was his philosophy. It was like a win at all costs. He went away with all the slogans, and he said, listen, if we get this right, we can win the World Cup. And the guys bought into it. He got the right players involved. He got the right combinations, and the team just was willing to work as hard as they can for this common goal.
So, how special was that win over the All Blacks in Wellington?
Yeah, that was like the catalyst of this team starting to really believe in what they're capable of. And that win in 20 was it 2017 at in or 2018 in Wellington was just. It was just the cream of the crop. It was special. The guys knew exactly what to do. We all bought into what it would have taken for this team to win. So, yeah, no, this team was special, and I think there the guys understood like it is possible. It is possible to go to Japan and do this thing.
And then a year later, just before the World Cup, we won the Rugby Championship. I think it was the first time in a decade that we had actually won that competition. How significant would you say it was that we did win that tournament on the eve of the World Cup in terms of building confidence?
No, it was massive because we went to Wellington again, drew that game for the second year in a row. Normally, it doesn't really happen. Like history doesn't really allow that, where a team goes and beats the All Blacks and then follows it up the following season with a great performance again. So, I think winning that rugby championship was massive because you get like a little bit of a taste of what it feels like to lift the trophy in green and gold, and that makes a huge difference. It gives guys a lot of confidence. It gives guys willingness to fight for each other. It gives you like a little bit of that pride of what it means to represent the Springboks well. So when that happened, I think the guys knew that. With the World Cup coming up, having New Zealand as the opener, and then from there, just working through the rest of the World Cup, that it would be possible.
Let's fast forward to the 2019 Rugby World Cup final. Stephen, I think it was the 3rd minute of the match when Beast scrummed. I think it was Kyle Sinclair. I like to say mercilessly into the ground. And at that point, England had to replace their tight end. I think it was their second replacement already that early in the match. And I turned to my wife in that moment and I said to her, "We're going to win this match today." It was almost as if I just knew it. I've spoken to other players who have played in Rugby World Cup finals, South Africans and otherwise, and they've all told me that there is a moment in the match where they just knew, okay, we've got this. Today is our day. We will win today, no matter what happens from here. Was there a moment in that match where you felt that way?
Yeah, I think probably with the opening try, like with Mapimpi's try down the left-hand side, which was just magical. I think from there and the way that the scrums went and the complete control that we showed throughout the entire final was just it was just it, there was just no ways that any team's going to beat us. And it was similar to what England did to New Zealand a week prior. There was just no way that you can see New Zealand coming back into that game. That's how we felt in that final. It's defensively, we were at the top of our game. Attack-wise, we did exceptionally well. And then when it comes to set piece, we out-scrummed them, out-mauled them, and we were just always on top of them. So for a team to feel like they're chasing their tails, they just can't keep up. The physicality is just too much. I felt from like beginning of the second half, I felt like there's no chance that we're going to lose this game because we just in control too much. And yeah, so when there was about 10 minutes or 5 minutes left, and we were a couple of scores ahead, and I just knew there's no chance of them coming back, and that's probably when it sunk in the most.
And what does it feel like when the referee blows the final whistle and you are a Rugby World Cup champion?
To be honest, for me it was like a mountain off my shoulders, because there's so much pressure going into that final. There's so much like eyes on you and expectation of a country and your friends and your family. And I mean the hundreds of messages you get leading into it. It's a lot of pressure. And for me, when that final whistle went, it was just like relief. It was just the weight just off my shoulders, and I can just go and enjoy this moment. And I think that's probably the best way to describe it, is that the task and the goal that we set out for ourselves was achieved, and then a lot of that pressure just got released, and you could just enjoy it, and there's nothing else that you can do to make this happen.
Now, I asked you earlier about Alistair as a coach. What can you tell us about Rassie?
For me, Rassie was and he played such a big part and such a and he was so involved in so many aspects of my career. And from when he was with director of rugby at the Stormers, with Alistair, he was involved and learned all the little tips and tricks of analysis and how to understand the game. And then from there, He was part of the conversation when I decided to go to France. He was one of the first people I phoned and said, "Listen here, Russ, like I've got this opportunity." He said, "Listen here, go and experience France. You'll probably come back a better player because you'll learn from the top 14, which is quite a tough competition to play, and you're going to scrum against Tongans and the French, and you're going to understand the French referees." And then, of course, giving me coming back, and then he becoming the Springbok coach, pulling me into a boardroom and saying, "Listen, you know, we need a squad of starters. We need a front row to start, and we need a front row to be a player off the bench. And you're going to play a massive role when it comes to playing off the bench, bringing energy, making a difference towards the end." And all these little things that he played such a big part in my career and had the final say. So I've, you know, as Alistair, like I've got so much time and respect for Rassie and always will have because of what he's meant for my rugby career. And if it wasn't for these two coaches, and of course like Matthew Proudfoot and Jacques Nienaber, all playing a massive role, but they were the key guys in shaping my career to where it ended up being today, if I can put it like that.
And then after that, there was this worldwide pandemic that came along. COVID-19 disrupted a lot of things, caused chaos across the globe. But we were back in action. It was almost a year and a half later against the British and Irish Lions, playing in an empty stadium. Just how tough was that series?
I think from a player point of view, being stuck in a hotel room for 6 weeks wasn't easy. Or being stuck in a hotel wasn't easy. But as well, it's like it's a once in a lifetime opportunity to play against the British Irish Lions. You just whatever curveball is thrown to you, if it's COVID or missing certain training days because you might have a positive result or a false positive result, it was all part of the journey. And we were lucky enough to have our families involved in the hotel as well, and they all had to isolate for 10 days. But I think from a once in a lifetime Springbok playing against the British Irish Lions, ours forever would be the most unique in saying like this was a tournament played at in closed doors. The only people that could be there was the members that was part of the Springbok squad, the staff. So yeah, it was such a unique experience, but it was very tough. It was very, very tough.
But satisfying to have won the series, no doubt.
No doubt, of course. No, winning the British Irish Lions, and I've played the second test match was my 50th game for the Springboks, which was also the cherry on the cake. Was just incredible. And to be part of a team that's when World Cup, Lions World Cup was pretty special.
Now, you remember we spoke before the 2019 World Cup, the significance of winning the Rugby Championship. Now, we didn't win it in the Jacques Nienaber years, but something that did stand out for me was hammering the All Blacks 35-7. It was a record score at the time at Twickenham, also on the eve of the 2023 Rugby World Cup. How significant would you say that result was in the bigger scheme of things?
Yeah, of course. And I don't know if, like, for me, vividly remembering building into that test match where Rassie and Jacques actually, their words to us or as a group was to go out and express ourselves. And I think there was a couple of games leading into it where we were playing very conservative rugby, almost trying to play winning style of rugby, and the results were pretty close. And I think going into that test match at Twickenham, like it was almost all shackles off. Like, listen, yeah, whatever happens, happens. Go out, express yourself. If you feel there's an opportunity for offload, take it. If it's try and play like you would have played when you were a kid. And I think there was a real understanding of the squad that said, "Listen, yeah, guys, we're just going to go out and play rugby. We're going to play this African style rugby that we want to play." And it worked. And going through that entire experience, we knew that we could put massive points on the All Blacks. We had like one over them. We had a bit of a understanding and a little bit of like, look, if we turn the taps, we close the taps, we can really put these guys under pressure. And yeah, and it just gave us a lot of confidence. And then from there, went into the World Cup knowing like if we ever had to face the All Blacks throughout this World Cup, that we had the firepower to actually beat them.
I want to ask you something, Stephen. In that match against them, I think I can't remember if we were 28-0 ahead or 35-0 ahead before they actually scored their seven. But either way, it doesn't really matter. The question is, when you're that far in front, is there a part of you that thinks, "Hey, listen, remember that day that they beat us 57-0? There's a chance that we could do that to them today."
Yeah. No, to be honest, you don't really think about like past things while you're playing. I think when you're controlling a game like that, you're so you're in such a good flow that you just want to focus on what the task at hand is. Like, and still, like, even leading 28-0, 35-0, the conversation from the leaders are still listening, guys, next job, next job. Let's focus on what the next task at hand is. So there's never moments in big games where guys actually start thinking about, "Oh, I'm going to enjoy the beer afterwards, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z." Like, I think the guys are really focused in the task at hand, and that's how you get those results, and that's how you get the guys to stay that focused.
And speaking of being focused, that is exactly what was required in an extraordinary run of games. Quarterfinal, semi-final, final. We won each game by 1 point. I don't think something like that will ever be done again. I'm not sure it had been done before that. It was extremely stressful from our point of view. I'd like to hear what it was like from your perspective.
You're involved in the game, and you're thinking to yourself, like, "Listen, yeah, I'm gonna do whatever I can to make a difference, to be part of it, to play a role." You don't really think about the one pointers up until someone points it out. Like, you treat a semi-final and a final and a quarter final as a must win. It doesn't matter if it's by 1 point or by 50 points. And I think the 1 point has probably kept us a bit sharper thinking about it afterwards. But while you're in it at that moment, you're just doing what you can to get the win. You just If those games had to tie, and you had to go into extra time, it was all about winning by a drop goal or winning by a penalty or whatever it took just to get it across the line. So while you're in it, it's not that stressful. Or it's stressful because you're playing playoff games, but it's not that, like, 1 point stressful that the fans and the people from the outside had to experience, unfortunately.
And how did it feel in 2023 when the referee blew the final whistle and you'd won the World Cup again?
Yeah, I think probably very similar to 2019, and I often get asked which one was a better feeling, and I often refer back to 2019, because 2019 was the Springboks came into that World Cup as, I think, fifth or sixth in world rankings. And no one really expected us to go that far. In 23, we were favorites to win, and I think that is, from a feeling point of view, the relief that I felt in 19 was probably doubled that in 23, because you came in as favorites, you came in as defending champions, and you had to fight tooth and nail to get to the final first. And then in that final, there was drama. There was Bongi got injured quite early. We had Dion Fury at hooker for 75 minutes. There was a lot of things happening around that test match that was quite intense and very suspenseful. But as a group, fighting it all the way through and getting the bomb squad on the field and them making a huge difference, and ending up winning it at the 80th minute mark was just special. So yeah, probably double the relief that I felt from the World Cup 2019, because the game just ran away from England. But this one was tight till the end, and when you get subbed off at 45 minutes or 50 minutes, unless there's an injury, there's no way of you getting back on the field. So there's no your job is done, and if you did what you can, that's all you got to take home with you at the end of the day.
I asked you about Alistair and I asked you about Russie. What can you tell us about Jacques Nienaber as a coach, the way you experienced him?
He was brilliant. I mean, I don't think I've got a bad thing to say about any of the coaches I've ever worked with. With Jock, it was black and white for me, and he was one of the coaches that I really enjoyed having a beer with as well, in the changing room or having a conversation around lunch table or something. And for me, because a big part of my rugby career, he was always my defense coach, so it was brutality. It was work rate. It was effort. It wasn't measured on how you're feeling. It was measured on what your output going to be. How hard are you going to hit that guy? How hard are you going to run, or how physical are you going to be in these scenarios? And for me, with Jock, he awarded and he praised guys that was willing to go the that was willing to put his head in a dark place, and I really enjoyed that. And for me, getting that message across to players as well as he did just got the guys hyped up and psyched up for any scenario. And he still to this day played a massive role in the lessons I've learned from rugby, and the stories that I can tell from rugby, and in the moments that gets shown on TV and highlights, those moments he played a massive role in.
Stephen, I know that it wasn't your plan to retire from rugby after that World Cup, but medically, there were reasons that forced your hand. Can you just talk us through what happened?
So I had a C1, so I had a C1 injury in my vertebra, and I had a fusion done. I did a C1 C2 fusion. Then the doctor, the specialist advised you wouldn't advise me to go ever play rugby again or do any sort of contact sport. So from a personal point of view, it was quite intense that I would have loved to be able to get to that 100 cap test mark. It was for me, it was my biggest throughout my career, winning the World Cups, and those things were massive highlights. But I also wanted to get to 100 caps, and I was considering maybe giving it a go. But then thinking about my wife, thinking about my family, thinking about the future, at that stage, I was 32 years old. I've achieved quite a lot in rugby, and there was an opportunity to do something outside of the game. And when I dislocated that C1, of course, there was a million emotions that ran through my head, and it wasn't just rugby, but it was finance and all these things. But then at the end of the day, it's the best decision I've ever made, like retiring at that stage, because it's given me a million other opportunities today. That keeps my calendar quite busy, which I'm very stoked about. So, yeah, it's unfortunate that it happened that early. I would have loved to still be involved in this Greatest Rivalry campaign, still be involved in the next World Cup, but I'm got a different role now, and I love talking about the sport as we're doing right now.
Absolutely. So, who was your toughest opponent?
Toughest opponent, I mean, I think there's so many of them, but probably thinking back to early career, a guy like Owen Franks, he was just insane. I think probably one of the best tight heads to ever play the game, up there with like Frans Malherbe status. He in 2012 was the first time I ever played against him, and the biggest lesson I've learned was in like in a 20 sorry 2011 was a Stormers Super Rugby semi-final quarter-final. And the first time I ever scrummed against him, and I thought, like I said, I really backed him as one of the best at that stage already, and engaging in that scrum, and I felt like very confident because I'm fresh, I just came onto the field, and he was been playing like 60 odd minutes. And as I engaged in that scrum, and I could just feel there's nothing I can do to stop him from moving forward, I quickly realized that I still have a big road to walk and a lot of things to learn about scrumming and being involved. So he was probably one of the toughest guys I've ever played against, and for years after, every time I played the Storm, played against Crusaders or the Vox against New Zealand, that was always one of my toughest opponents. And then probably locally, and one of my teammates is Frans Malherbe, and Frans Malherbe, like those Wednesday sessions at the Box, when myself, Malcolm, and Vince were scrumming against Beast, Bongi, and Frans, it was proper tough, and you had to work. You had to work not to make your name, not to eat your name with a plank, as Jock would say. So, those were my two toughest opponents.
Is there a particularly funny moment that you can share with us from your time with the Springboks?
Yeah, probably there's quite a lot that's not PG-13, so I must probably just keep those for myself. But one of my favorite ones is after the 2019 World Cup was the little amount of sleep that myself and Erge had, flying flying back to Joburg after the final, and going through the entire evening, the Saturday night, going through the Sunday, and then most of the group flying back to Monday, and they left behind a couple of key players. And I don't know if it was on purpose, but all the guys that really are not the best behaved, like myself and Malcolm and Bongi and a couple of key guys, got left behind in Tokyo, and then we all flew out the Tuesday, and then that myself and Erke's flight was booked for 9 o'clock on Monday. It was Tuesday morning, and that Monday morning at 5, we're still standing in the pub, and my alarm goes off, and Erke tells me to put it away. Eventually, getting to a point where it's like we have to go now, otherwise we're gonna miss our flight. We get to the airport, jump on a flight, land in Singapore, and then in Singapore, a 12-hour layover. And what does two people do that just won the World Cup? We end up going at it again, holding on for another 10, 12 hours, and then from there making our way to the flight to fly back to Joburg. So that's pretty one of the most intense, if you think about all the pre-seasons I've ever done, every single fast break session, every single fitness session, that was probably one of the toughest ones I've done, and probably one of the funniest ones I've done as well.
Sounds great. One more question for you, Stephen. What are you up to these days?
Yeah, so a lot of media work, so podcasting. I do a bit of work for SuperSport as well, which is a lot of fun and really enjoying it. And then just trying to build a couple of businesses. So I'm very, very involved with Bomb Squad and brand, building out that brand. My family business is we got like a little cash loans business called Pronto. So we do salary advances based out in Somerset West, and then from there it's just, yeah, just brand building for me. It's building out these cool little ventures that I found myself involved in, and then it's just trying to grow them as nicely as I can, and staying very involved and active in the media space.
Sounds good to me. Stephen Kitsoff, it was an absolute pleasure having you on Front Row Rugby today, and I really hope you'll come and visit us again.
No, thank you very much.